views expressed and the opinions given by the individual hosts and their guests do not necessarily reflect those of Paramania, its affiliates, or its sponsors.
You are listening to Paramania Radio.
Soul Searching.
Hello, everyone. It's Chuck and Soul Searching. We got an awesome show for you tonight. We have a couple of the people over at NJ Rope with us tonight, Frank Lazzaro, and his assistant director and case manager, Carrie Maroney, and another co-assistant director, Katie Connolly. Yeah. I knew I was going to do it. I have everything written separately there. So how are you guys out there doing tonight?
Not too bad. How are you, Chuck?
Not too bad. And you guys out in the chat room, if you can't hear them too well, let me know. Made a couple changes once again. You know how that works. So last week we had Kenny Biddle on the show. Hope everyone liked that show. We also spoke about a protest that may have happened in Norristown. Just to let you guys know, that was postponed. The city asked for that to be postponed. They're actually looking to get more people involved. So if any of you out there are in the Norristown area and you're able, just keep an eye out on my show or my website and Facebook pages, and I will be letting you know when the protest is available. For those of you who do not know, the old Montgomery County Jail is looking to be torn down. It's from the 1700s, and they want to put up subsidized housing, and nobody's really for that.
Yeah, that's a bad thing.
Yeah, it's not good. Not good at all. So tell me a little bit about you guys' team, Frank.
All right. Well, we are, as you can tell, a New Jersey-based team. We're located right outside of Philadelphia. Basically, our team that has three smaller teams within it. We have a northern team, a southern team, and a Pennsylvania team. We do like all paranormal groups do. We service homes, public locations, historical sites, try to help out where we can by giving back a little to society. We do a charity event, so forth and so on. So, it's pretty much about all what we do. But we're very active, very busy, and we like it that way. So that's where we are. And we have a couple of the case – our case manager here, Curry, she's been working hard trying to get us additional cases. So we're looking to expand upon what we've already done.
Nice.
Some of the different locations, some of the historical locations we haven't visited yet, or along the lines of always looking for private homes to help people out in. Wherever we can be of assistance, we will. So
yeah, I find that private homes are always a little more special. You got to go in. You got to do it a little more professional. You can't have fun like a public place.
Exactly.
But
going
in with intentions of helping. So
yeah, they're important. Now you have to be on your best with them, and you got to make sure your personnel are ready. You have to make sure they're trained properly and understand what they're getting themselves into. You go to a place like the fort, Fort Mifflin. There, although the place can be serious as well, because anytime you go into a facility or a location that has any type of activity in it, you always have to be on your best behavior. But certainly when you go to a private home where you don't know what you're dealing with, it makes it a whole different ballgame. So you deal with cases that that seem like they're easygoing, Casper cases that would turn into something that you have things thrown at you in a moment or two. So you just have to be prepared to deal with that and know when to walk away from it if necessary and regroup.
Right.
Make sure you reapproach it properly. So
completely understood. Now I just want to send a personal shout out to you guys. I was very impressed that there were six members of your team there that day, I believe. I went down to Fort Mifflin, and I was helping out for the day. And I came with intentions of helping park people, but when I got there, the NJ Rope crew had the whole place covered. So I just ended up being Wayne's right-hand man for the day, and, you know.
And which I'm sure he appreciated. He the help he can get, so, yeah.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And the shout-out basically is that there aren't a lot of teams that give back to places. I mean, you know, of course you got to go in and pay your money, but that's to help keep the place open. What else is there? What else are you doing to help help places like Fort Mifflin survive? You know what I mean?
It goes beyond you know, just like you're saying with that prison you're talking about there. I mean, it's the same thing with that. Place like that, you know, paranormal groups go in there, and if they were to approach that place for investigations, it would be something that, you know, the $500 or $600 you might give them for the night would pay a bill for them.
Right.
That's how it works. I mean, and so Fort Mifflin's the same thing. And, you know, they depend on volunteers to go in and to help clean the place up, to help weed whack like we've done before, to help park cars when they have events that raise money for them. So it's important that that all the groups out there get involved,
right,
as much as possible. And you know, you're right. A lot of groups don't do that, and it's a shame. There's got to be 300 paranormal groups in this tri-state area alone.
Probably more than that. I mean,
at least. you know, I'd love to know the exact number because it's growing. And I started about almost 4 or 5 years ago, give or take. I don't know exactly. But, you know, and there weren't nearly as many as there are now. In the last couple of years, it's really blossomed. And, you know, TV does that. The television shows have brought that on. And I think we've all somewhat come from that. But not everybody's going to be famous. You know, so you have to be prepared to act responsibly and to try and do what's right. And, you know, a lot of groups don't take it that serious, whereas we do.
Right. Completely understood.
Makes sense what I'm trying to say. That's, you know, it's kind of a nice way of putting it. But you can say it's getting better. I find that, you know, I find that you hear a lot of groups. You know, NJ Rope, a little bit about us, just, you know, we train hard. Our members are required to take classroom time, you know, 8 to 10 hours worth of classroom time. They're required to take equipment training. They have certain investigations that are required to a certain number of investigations they have to fulfill, certain ones that are actually set up for them so that they're, you know, we know the conditions at least best we can to give them some sort of experience in the field. Then you have in the end, they all take a written exam.
That's awesome. I think that's a very important part of any type of training, because you see too many people, and I'm even guilty of it. I have a relatively new team. You know, I had some members that were awesome and it didn't work out. So I ended up finding a whole completely new team. And when I did that, it was at the point where me and my wife were the only two with experience. Now, I can't give them experience until we investigate. So 6 months down the road, my guys have experience and we're ready to go in and do some big stuff. You know what I mean?
Which is good. And we have about between 20 and 30 members at any given time. And it's always difficult to keep people trained. I mean, you know, you got, fortunately, the group we have right now has been pretty consistent. So we've managed to keep our membership together intact for better part of a year and a half now.
And I think it's awesome. You guys have three different teams. That's pretty neat. I mean,
well, it does work. I mean, we try to, it really hasn't really gone 100% into effect yet as well as we'd like it to. Again, it comes down to preparation and so forth, but the object is to have it so that, you know, we get a case up in North Jersey, I can turn to our assistant director, Valerie, and tell her to, you know, I need you to take your team up to wherever, you know, and we can deal with that. And on the same day, I can turn to Katie and say, I need you to take a team over to the city and deal with something for us. So the object is to be able to spread ourselves out and deal with whatever, whenever.
That's awesome.
To, you know, making sure the personnel is prepared to do that, because, you know, you need to make sure your officers are trained. You need to make sure, at least when we have officers. I'm not sure how a lot of other groups function, but I know we have officers who all have duties, jobs beyond just showing up and leading a team around. You know, we have case managers. Katie's our personnel coordinator. We have Valerie, our assistant director, is a research officer. So you see, everybody has a job that adds to the whole team dimension. And any given day, because you're – and the nice thing about it, too, is all of our members are – responsible for getting back analysis, which is generally the case. But the thing about it is if they're unable to make a particular investigation, they're still required to get back analysis because they're part of the team. The emphasis of team is there. Of course, you can't make it doesn't mean you leave the people that you're supposed to work with unaided.
Right, right, and that's awesome. I have to say, I mean, you know, I've met you guys several times. We met at the Witch's Ball, and we had a very long discussion out at Fort Mifflin, which was awesome. And, you know, putting all evidence and things like that aside, I believe your team has ran the way it should be done. I just
Thank you. Appreciate that.
Your people, know what they're doing, make sure they're all involved, and it's hard to do that. I don't care what anyone says.
It absolutely is hard. I mean, you're dealing with volunteers. You know, it's not like a, you know, the nice thing about when you go to work is you have a boss, a supervisor, you can hold their paycheck in front of your face. You know, there really isn't anything like that. This, I mean, you have to.
Right.
Have,
if someone doesn't want to do it, they just don't have to.
They don't have to. Right. And fortunately, I believe that we're able to keep the team moving forward in a really positive fashion because, you know, I treat people the way I want to be treated, number one. At least I believe that's the case. I mean, you guys are sitting here. Is that the case? I mean, you know.
Yeah.
You should tell them no.
You should tell me no. Seriously, we do try and really put a spin on things where we really make it fun at the same time as make it serious. I think that, you know, you have to give people responsibilities. People want things to do. You know, if they don't show up and have something to do, then it becomes boring. So you have to have responsibilities. You have to have a purpose. You have to have a mission. And when you can get everybody on the same page, that's a you know, kudo in your corner. You know, and to be able to do it for a group of people that, like you said, can walk away at any given time is something special. So I'm really fortunate to have wonderful assistant directors and officers, and the membership is outstanding. So I mean, it all goes back to them. You're only as strong as your weakest link.
That's awesome. Absolutely.
That's just the way I like to keep it. So, you know, and of course, you know, every group has its issues. I mean, we're not going to be any different than anybody else. But there's, you know, there's things that have to be worked out. But the nice thing about it again is the fact that we try to handle it in an adult capacity where we, we're all looking at each other and say, hey, we're all brothers and sisters in this. The only thing we have is each other. We're like a family.
And so that's exactly what was said in the chat room just now.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Our Valerie, our assistant director there said it. So about Colleen says it. So Colleen being one of our assistant lead investigators. So the, we do emphasize family and, you know, it's. My door is always open. We do try to do fun things as well. It's not always serious. In fact, we just scheduled a canoe. Water rafting trip. You know, things like that, just to get out and do something different, get away from the everyday marching beat of the investigation. You know, to try to go places that are more easygoing, but same time, you know. Remember what your main purpose is. And like I said, we do work hard. And that's, you know, really is a kudo to the team that we've been able to be so successful in such a short time.
Well, send a shout out to your team. They're listening. I mean, tell them what you want.
I just did. Yeah, they're all out there. I can say that all you guys are all great. You know it. So I really do appreciate everything you all do for us.
Absolutely.
I don't think there's any secret there. So.
All right, Carrie, Katie, let's shut him up for a minute.
Good deal.
Yeah, let's shut him up. Give him a breather.
I could be like that.
He's got somebody put an energizer in him, didn't they?
I just woke up, man. I got my nap earlier. I'm ready to go.
Yeah, I hear you. Listen, I'm going to get a little bit off topic here. Carrie.
Yes.
Tell me, come closer to the mic. Tell me
yes.
Your scariest experience being on NJ Rope.
Probably when I got mad at her.
Pretty much.
No ghost compares to that.
I don't really have. I mean, honestly, investigation-wise, I really don't have a scary experience. Like, I haven't been scared on an investigation at all.
At all?
No.
Do you think if the other team members weren't there that you'd be scared?
I don't know.
Because I would. I mean, I can go into anywhere with people.
Maybe. If I was by myself, probably.
I remember that old show on MTV, what was it, Fear, where they sent those people to lock them in a jail cell or something for like 2 hours straight with no radioactivity. That might freak me out.
That might freak me out a little bit, being that I'm claustrophobic too. So,
Katie.
Yes.
You have a scary experience?
Well, I've been with the team for almost 3 years, and to be honest, in that 3 years, I haven't. In that 3 years, I have not had a scary experience yet. Knock on wood that I don't.
Well, actually, when you do, you enjoy it because that's what you're in it for.
Yeah.
I've had a couple scary experiences with my team. I seen something come out of a wall once. Ooh, got it on video.
Can I say something?
Yeah. Here he goes.
Am I allowed?
We'll allow that.
No, I actually had a scary experience.
I was getting to you.
That's okay. Well, I want to get to you first. So, no, I have had one. We were on an investigation, and I'm not one to back down usually. They'll tell you that, you know, I keep pushing forward. Usually take the message and say, okay, I get it. I'm gonna do what I need to do. I'm going to get my job done. I'm here to complete. And there was one particular instance where I actually, with another member, who happened to be one of our sensitives, we both saw what we perceived to be something that was completely negative and evil in another room in a house that we had been investigating. And immediately both of us stopped dead in our tracks and looked at each other and started to backtrack out of place. And I'm not one to do that. And that would be probably the closest to saying scared in a sense. But once we left the room, we were fine. I mean, it was, and we went back in later on and it was no problem. But at that moment in time, it was like we had gone forward. I would have felt something bad would happen. So that's kind of where you use your instinct at that point in time.
Frank, you ever been touched?
Absolutely.
And that didn't scare you?
It shook you up.
Dude,
for a second.
I mean, you can push your manhood out of the way real quick and just tell the truth. Because it scares me.
I've actually been touched in Fort Mifflin, pulled pretty hard in Fort Mifflin, to the point where I've been jerked back good 2 feet from where I was standing. And yeah, initially it was more of a shock factor, I think, but to say I was actually scared by it, no, because what it did is it more or less made me start asking a lot more questions, really, because I said, who did it? You know, I wanted to know what caused it and who was responsible for it. Did it make me run away or want to leave the room? Absolutely not. I generally haven't come across anything like that. Yeah, now I'm not saying that we wouldn't come across some dark case where, you know, some malevolent being is in there waiting for us on the other side of the door that, you know, obviously we wouldn't need to regroup and walk out of something that, you know, we'd scared from it. But at this point in time, we've been pretty fortunate. I mean, you know, I think a lot relies on Chuck that, you know, we know each other. You know, we're able to,
right,
whenever
absolutely.
We're alone, we always have somebody with us. We know each other's personalities inside and out because it's part of the program that we emphasize to people that you have to know the other person's personality because if they change, you need to know it. So we really do rely on each other a lot like that. So I really haven't had anything to say. But anyway, go ahead, guys. I'm taking all your airtime.
No, it's okay, man. Hey, that's what I'm here for. Speak on.
Speaking on. But like I said, we get along real well, and I think that knowing that knowledge that the other person is not going to walk away from you or not going to run away from you is enough to be comforting. And we're all pretty smart about it. You know, one thing we teach is instinct. And if your instinct starts to tell you that something's not right, you need to back out.
Right.
And that's key. You know, so people who don't respect what we're looking for, that might be the ones who get themselves in trouble. Mm-hmm. I believe.
Understood. Understood.
I mean, I know when I start, when people hear that I'm a ghost hunter, you know, I usually get, well, aren't you scared? And I'm actually, it's weird because before I got into this, I thought it would be because I can't watch scary movies or know that or go to haunted houses like the fun haunted houses because knowing that somebody is going to jump out at me, I guess the anticipation is what scares me. But going to haunted locations and it doesn't scare me. I just want to get in there. It's like, I don't care if I have to crawl around on the ground in the crawl space, you know, and you hear a noise, I want to run too. We were at a location where my team and I were on the second floor in a room and I heard a noise at the other end of the hall in another room. And before my team knew it was there, I started running towards it. And they're like, where are you going? I'm like, I'm going to go check this out.
Want to know what it is.
So, yeah.
We're ghost hunters, people.
So,
you know, that's what we're there for, right?
Yeah, to get back to your original question, no. I mean, I'm not saying I'm not going to be scared on an investigation. Possibility is always there, but as of right now, no.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. Pretty cool.
Respectful. Right.
There's certain things that have happened, you know, with my team that just they like I'm a tough guy. Don't get me wrong. When stuff starts happening, I run toward it. But there's some things that just scare everyone, and I mean, I'm not saying I was scared for my life, but An example is, let's see. I don't know. There's so many of them. Like, I've only been lightly touched. I've never really been pushed or shoved or anything. But seeing things and hearing things that, like, I was in the Selma Mansion one day, and I refer to it so much because it is my favorite place. I'm actually on the board there now because those guys want me to help them out, and they want to help me out, so it's kind of cool. But either way, I was in the basement there one time, and it was just me and my wife. One of the other team members had walked out, and we have it clear on an audio recording, and something yelled my name twice, perfectly, Class A. And it's not a scary feeling, but it's like something that's out there knows my name.
Right. And that's what I always tell them, the same thing. I mean, it's gotten to the point, and I've done so many investigations that over the years, it's almost to the point now where consistently you'll hear my name called out or spoken in some form or another for investigations. And at first it was fun, and then it gets to the point when you say, you know, that means I've pissed off 100 different entities out there.
Yeah,
yeah.
You're out there.
They all know my name. What are they doing when I'm sleeping? You know?
That's right.
And that from that perspective, I guess if you want to say scared, it's more scared of the doors I've opened up that I can't necessarily close, than the actual circumstance I'm in any given moment in time. It's trying to protect myself, protect my family, protect my household, family, my friends. You know, that's important to me. And, you know, knowing that I've been visited here in my bed by things that I've probably investigated the night before or was about to investigate the next day, that can be a little disconcerting.
Right, right.
And that has happened because we get involved with some cases that are, you know, at times where we have to do a little more specialized work in these houses, and it's not necessarily going to be a just investigate, give the evidence, go home, or sometimes you have to deal with the things you find, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Now,
it's important. So
I have to say, I believe something followed me home one time. We've gotten to the point where we do our own little ritual to make sure nothing follows us home. But, you know, we only do that when we feel unsafe. It doesn't really, like in public investigations, we don't really do it. But if it's a private and the family is feeling unsafe, we got to get rid of it before we go. I'll tell a story. When I first started investigating, I came home one night. And it was regular night, nothing strange going on. And both of my children were in the bed and sound asleep. And it was probably around midnight. And I looked at my wife and said, good night. And she said, good night. And a voice between both of our heads, which we both heard, said, good night.
That'll wake you up.
That's a little freaky.
Yeah, that'll wake you up.
We got up.
I think you probably slept with your eyes open for a little bit.
Yeah, yeah. We got up, looked around the house, nothing strange. Both kids were snoozing. We had to write it off as something followed us home. And we thought it was a child's voice. And it was approximately 3 or 4 days later during the middle of the week. I was laying down and I rolled over and put my arm around my wife. And then I dozed off. And when I came to, she was not there. She told me she had never been in the room. It was kind of creepy. And I think it was the same night I woke up and I seen like two shadow figures of a kid. But nothing has happened since. Like every once in a while we see a shadow pass by or something strange like that. And we just write it off as the guy who follows us around. You know, it's not – and people see it. It's really crazy because like my mother-in-law will come over and she'll be like, who just walked through the kitchen? Ah, that's that guy following us around.
Right.
But
we take precautions. I mean, I one of our classes that the members are required to take is a psychic protection class. And, you know, it incorporates maybe 40 or 50 different methods, you know, with everything that you could pick and choose from to protect yourself, protect your family, protect your clients. And it becomes a lot of visualization. Intentions, what you're trying to use this stuff for, the two words they always hear me say.
Visualization and intent.
Yeah, and so every one of us has been more or less instructed that they should protect their houses. I mean, my house has been smudged. It's been sealed.
My house is I do it once a month.
And whether that actually works or not, that stands to be told. But, you know, if something's going to follow, it's going to follow you. But I think having faith that what you've done to protect yourself, it helps you move forward. And that confidence, you know, it's a mental game, you know?
Right, right.
It's pretty much comes to where if you're weak in the head or you're weak in the body, then you're going to be more subject to whatever is there. And if you keep yourself strong and mentally strong in particular, you're able to ward off things a lot easier because you're just you're not feeding into it.
Yeah, but here's the question. Don't you at the time want to be more subject to it so you can find it?
Yes and no. We do ground ourselves and protect ourselves prior to any investigation. We do usually have a grounding prayer. Members have been more or less told to protect themselves before they even left their home to come to the investigation. Pretty much to do it whenever they want, really, but you know, on a regular basis. But certainly on the day of an investigation to take whatever necessary steps they have to do to protect themselves. Because you only can protect yourself first. I mean, if you protect yourself first, then the group protection comes after that. Your self-protection can spread itself out to the rest of the team if you're confident in it. And I think that is something that we try and emphasize without getting cocky about it.
Right. Know? Understood. It's totally.
You know?
Quick shout out. I want to shout out to Seekers Club Paranormal. Those guys are out there tonight. They listen in regularly. They're good guys. And they just recently invited me on an investigation with them. So I'm going to try to work that out. It's up in New York. And also shout out to Dean, who said, I just popped in to listen. Hang out a few minutes, man. We're live on the air right now talking about the paranormal. So I hope you enjoy it. Everybody else out there in the NJ Rope community and anyone else listening, I am glad you're tuning in. Just a quick note, my team, if you don't know who it is, I'm the founder of Simply Paranormal. You can find us on Facebook at Simply Paranormal or our website at www.simplyparanormal.us. And if you sign up for our newsletter, this weekend we are going to attempt to broadcast live on location at the Selma Mansion. We've got 10 people going. It's a 12-hour investigation, and we're going to try to set it up live. It's going to be kind of hard because I'm streaming across 4G, but I'll do my best because there really is no internet connectivity there.
Good.
And Kenny just popped in the room. Hello, Kenny. We're going to try to do that, so go over and sign up for our newsletter because it is exclusively for newsletter email subscribers. I'm going to shoot out an email right before we leave that day, and that's going to give you all the information to log on and watch the live feed.
Very good.
Everyone else, this is NJ Rope. You guys are awesome. How many team members do you have total, Dina?
Currently, I would say 25. Not all field investigators. Some of our
25.
Yeah.
And if you guys go to NJ Rope's website, you'll see that they have teams split up into different areas, which is kind of cool. That keeps them small but wide at the same time.
Keeps us we're not getting overworked as well. You're dealing with we've had pretty much investigations consistently almost since the beginning of the year. Really haven't had too many weekends where we've had off.
Right.
So we try and just spread the work out, send teams. I said it doesn't always work out perfectly, but we do the best we can. And basically, mostly our officers are our core team. So situations where we need either a quick response team to go out or a team that has been designed to cover every need that every basis that we need to cover for an investigation, our officers would be the people that would be our first call.
Nice.
For more, majority of the investigations. Additional membership fills in to complete that that investigation team for the evening. And generally I try to keep it so that if it's a northern investigation, it's the northern team, and Pennsylvania, bring to Pennsylvania, they get the first phone calls and so
right,
forth.
Right. You know what I have is social members. And mm-hmm. It's kind of cool. Basically it's our team gets first choice, and if they can't make it to an investigation, the social members fill in.
Okay.
And social members just help us go over evidence and find new locations, stuff like that.
We have people in the background do the same thing, analysts.
So,
every group has to have that. In fact, we just started up we're working on a process of starting up basically a long-distance associate membership now, whereas people that would like to work with us but obviously can't make investigations because they live two or three states across the country from us, they are able to come on board, read through our classes, take an exam, just to prove they've read through classes, and then start analyzing after that to assist us behind where to work. In a sense, you go out, you set up, you investigate, you come home. It's the hard work starts when you go home and start ripping it all apart. So, get into that EVP analysis becomes the chore
And it definitely is. And I love the fact that you guys train your people, you know, as much as you can before you send them out there. That's awesome.
And that's the goal. They get their time out in the field, but they're certainly required to, before they can do a private home, they're required to take classes. And that's just how it has to be. They cannot walk into a private home. I mean, certain situations I'll allow membership to come in and do, like, for instance, the Burlington County Prison or something like along those lines, something they get out and get some experience.
Right, definitely.
And something along the, something to the point where it wouldn't be as dangerous, and there's a lot of people around. But when you go into a private home, it's a whole different ballgame, and people need to be prepared for that. So they're pretty much told that until they take the actual classes, they won't be allowed to do that. That's the reason why we start our classes in January and June. And the members have a 6-month training period where they're still probationary members. They have to complete all the requirements within a 6-month time frame. And if they don't, then obviously the situation could be a little different for them. So,
yeah, what's cool is that the paranormal industry itself has no standards. And if there were more people that created standards or went by a certain set of protocol, there wouldn't be as much controversy in the field as there is. I mean, it's a no-pay field. Where right. You really don't do anything. You play with a lot of scientific gadgets, but you're not really performing science. You know what I mean? It's it's a catch-22, no matter how you look at it. So,
yeah, I looked at MJ here, one of our members here. She put up there a lighthouse we thought was safe. And we went to the Absecon Lighthouse, and something that you think would be a completely Casper case. You walk in there, you go there for a little bit of time. Place been investigated probably 100 times, Turns out where we're in there and the conditions that night, just to give you a little example of what it was like, how things can turn so fast. Place like that where you think it's nothing, the conditions were horrible outside and
stormy,
windy, horrible, cold night. Probably a lighthouse keeper's worst nightmare. If you think of a sense of if there were a lighthouse keeper who still remained behind in the building. So here we are, a bunch of investigators walking around asking his name 50 times, we're in his way and doing what he perceived to be his job. So almost got to that point where that night became actually we were fighting for our lives in a sense, really, because everywhere we had one of our members get scratched. Never would expect that in a place like that. They had never had anything like that happen before. So anywhere you go, we're not the kind of team that goes in and provokes at all. I mean, provoking is not allowed. So I know it wasn't anything like that. I just think he just didn't want to be bothered, or whoever it was for that matter didn't want to be bothered, and consequently he lashed out at us. So you always got to be prepared.
Yeah, that's always a freaky incident. We had a team member get scratched in upstate New York. My throat is killing me. You guys have a... investigations that are open to the public, like other people can attend, or that you come in and teach them or anything like that? A lot of teams do
we're
that.
Actually, it's funny you said it. We are starting that now. In fact, we're going to be trying to do it at Burlington County Prison. We just did it, I guess it was about 3 weeks ago now. It would take April 6th. Okay, April 6th we went, and we did bring some public with us and go through. But these people were people that we had intentions of joining the team. But it was more of a trial, come out and see if you like it before you actually sign the paperwork. And so they came out and we did work with them. And consequently, most of them did join, which is great. So give us our next class for June, to be honest with you. So the but we are going to be starting in November. We're looking at possibly November, if not sooner, an event. Of the same nature where we'll bring the public in and have it be an open public. We have done other things in the past. We've done the Red Mill Museum where we had an event there. We've done an event up at the Allentown Library. We do hold events like that for the public. Try to do at least one a year, which is – it's just a lot of time setting it up. It's hard work getting it prepared along with all your other casework. So.
Oh, absolutely. It's always hard work to bring the public in anyway because you have to start from scratch and teach them and make them understand,
Right. We do lectures. We're on library lectures, outreach program, as we call it. We have several of them lined up, and I think we've got – if you ever see our calendar, it's pretty booked up towards the end of the year with lectures. In fact, as it stands, the way our year breaks down is basically in October, November, December. December we take off if we can, aside from private emergency cases that come in. But for the most part, we won't do much in November and December because of the holidays. But October and November are set aside for the sort of functions where we get out and do lectures or promotional stuff, try to education stuff, be out there and feedback to society a bit that way. January through, you know, September are pretty much our heavy investigation year, part of the year. And then
I think it's that way for most teams. I know during the holidays you don't get much, and it's probably because, you know, people don't want you in there during the holiday season. It's just different. You know what I mean?
Yeah, cases still come in. We have had cases that have come through over the holiday season. It seems like every year we plan on taking off in December. And I know that, you know, Kerry and I are generally, with her being a case manager and my having to deal with a lot of the other stuff, we're pretty much busy straight through the holidays.
We're always busy.
You know, we don't get too much of a break on our end. Caseload does drop, but then it becomes a point when you start doing wrap-ups and you have the occasional case that pops in where they have someone who gives you a call and they need help. So they do come along, but for majority of the year, that is definitely the quieter time, which allows us to focus on things like getting our new class together for January, trying to get, you know, any adjustments that we have to do to our training that we didn't like the year before. Look at our membership, make sure everything is where everybody needs to be, so forth and so on. So we really do take time to get our officers together and meet up and have discussions of how we're going to make things better for the next year. So
yeah, cool, absolutely cool.
That's how it works for us. But you see, got a lot of people on here. It looks good. I'm glad everybody's coming out. We do appreciate everybody joining in. And,
thank you.
Yeah, there's a full house tonight. We got to keep going. That's awesome. How long have you guys been ghost hunting? Or you in general? How long have you been ghost hunting, Frank?
I've started with a group called Double Visions back, I want to say almost 5 years ago now, like 4 or 5 years ago. My wife's saying four. Yeah, I think it's closer to five. I don't know. Engine ropes have been around since 2009, so it's been at least 4 years for us. So probably closer to 5 years now, for me personally. Done a lot of investigations over that time, so experiences have been great. I've been fortunate to be involved with a lot of difficult cases that have really challenged what we're working for, which is, you know, what we're out to do. So it's been a pleasure. How about you guys?
Yeah, you guys are quiet. You guys got to push him off of the mic there and get in.
You guys got, they got to talk. It should be you talking if I don't talk.
I'll talk. It's Carrie. And Katie's been part of the group since 2010, so almost 3 years in the end of August.
Cool. I started my group October 2011. We actually put our Facebook page up in September and called the official first date October 1st. It's kind of cool. But, you guys definitely sound like you have the experience, and I think it's awesome having you on the show and, you know.
For having us.
Yes, we're going to. Yeah, we got plenty of time, so it's no bye-byes yet.
No. And Joe is wanting Katie to talk more.
Okay, go ahead.
Sorry, Joe. which Joe is this? Gates?
Our Joe.
Mr. Gates.
Talk, Katie. Wow, she just got put on the spot. Time to talk.
You're such a shy fellow.
I don't know what to say. I'm a shy lady. I don't know.
Tell us about yourself, Chuck. How long have you been doing this?
I talk about myself every time. I've been doing this for approximately 3 years. I started out with a group named DCPI, Delaware County Paranormal Investigators. They've been doing it for like 9 or 10 years, long before the shows. And I couldn't get along with the founder. I mean, he was a good guy. You know, we had a few drinks together and just couldn't get along. So I left and I did the thing that he always knew that I was going to do. I started my own team. And from there, you know, I got a great group of people who we blew up really fast. And then it got to the point where we were doing so many investigations that we started hating each other. And that's just basically what happened. There was a point where my team leader and I had went on something like 21 straight investigations. We were actually going on investigations with other teams to help out. And it was day in and day out, charging batteries, two nights a week, 3 nights a week. Sometimes in the middle of the week we would go scout out a private investigation. Woman says stuff flying around a room. And he lived in Delaware, so he would drive up here, and we would go meet the lady, and it's 10 o'clock at night, and we both get up at 5 o'clock in the morning, you know? It just got to the point where it consumed us, so it did split our team up.
You can easily do that.
Yeah.
Forget about it.
So,
if you let it.
I put it all on the back burner for a while. I was having some problems with my father. He had cancer, and we went from there. It was all good. I found a couple of new people that were very interested and started training them, and my wife became our case manager, and you know, we're good to go. We have a great team right now, a lot of cool people, and it's working out. The hardest part is the same as every other team. The hardest part's going over evidence. You know, evidence is hard to get people together to do, and you know, I have my team are the kind of people who party all the time. So I say it diligently. If they're not out partying, I'm out partying with them. So, and you know, we do a lot of different things. Like one of them is a professional photographer, so she always has photo shoots. Another one has a new boyfriend, so they're always out together. And you know, it's tough getting a lot of people that enjoy going out and doing things. It's tough getting them together in one room.
Right.
Their free time is consumed by things that they're doing. So we limit our investigations because I have so much more up my sleeve to do. It's crazy. Like I do the Pennsylvania Paranormal Connection, Paranormal Rehab. Paranormal Rehab is an online web show I started, which I haven't even updated in over a month now. It's because crazy stuff going on, investigation after investigation. And I have Simply Paranormal. I have an in-home vinyl graphics and design business. I have a full-time job, and it just doesn't end.
I hear you. I understand completely when it comes to that, not having time for anything besides everything you wake up in the morning and do. So it's tough to find time for the family and everything. And that's an important thing. You have to find time for the family. So
And I do. I have to set aside that certain time.
Yeah,
and
you have to.
People don't even realize how hard it is to take on a radio show because you have to book those times. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, at this point, I have three people booked, but none of them are next week. I got to find somebody to fill in next week. So I have to spend all that extra time, that 20 minutes before I go to bed, sending out letters asking people if they want to be on a show.
Right.
Things like that. You really don't realize what it is until you control it. And then it's like, wow, that's so much more than I expected.
I agree. With the reference to the paranormal stuff here, the group, you know Dave Giuliano?
Oh, yeah. Good friend.
Okay. Hey, he had mentioned to me, we work well with them, and we look up to them a lot for a lot of different things that we try and accomplish. And I went into his store one day, and I mentioned to him that I had wanted to start. Well, I was starting my own group, and he looked at me right in the eyes, and he said, "Why?" And I laughed at that. At the time, I said, "Because you know, this is what I want to do." And now I know what he meant. You know,
absolutely.
This is so much work to do what I do. And not having all the extra responsibilities like you have, and I have other responsibilities outside of that are different than that. But it's tough. I mean, to try and find a balance.
It's a killer, man.
It's tough.
It really is. But people, you know, you say you're a paranormal investigator, and you have a radio show, and you know, you do a little graphic design. People think it's all just hobby and fun, and it's so much. It's so time consuming for things like that. And to be honest with you, 90% of the time, I don't even get to go over my own evidence because, like, my wife will be in the other room. Like right now, she'll be going over EVPs while I'm on the radio.
Right.
And it's not because I choose not to. It's just because my time is consumed. You know what I mean?
I hear you. I mean, many late nights, you know, my wife will tell you that I work my 8 hours and then come home and there's another 5 hours at night. Sitting down doing work for the group, and that's pretty much every day consistently. It's a lot of work to try and
that's what I do when I'm not at work. I do little errands and that, but it's like I come home and I'm doing stuff for the group. I'm analyzing evidence, I'm putting reports together, and
yeah, it's tough.
It's another job, but I enjoy it.
Yeah, the reward is the fact that you know, looking back over the years, I mean, every investigator has their good investigations and their bad ones, ones they wish they did a little differently, particularly directors. You know, I'm sure you go back and you look at all the things you could have done they wish he did differently, and you know how it affected one thing the way he didn't want it to quite go. But that's how we learn, you know. And the thing about it is I wouldn't change it. I mean, this is what I do. It's sort of a calling for us to be here doing what we're doing. We believe in what we do. I feel as if we've been given something of a gift in a sense. Some of us through being sensitives or just being strong enough to go out and do what we do. I mean, not everybody wants to go looking for what we're trying to search out to help people. I mean, it just the rewards are when people that you set out to actually receive the help and walk away from it feeling pretty good about themselves.
Yes.
That's what makes it work, you know, and all that work comes back and you say, you know, even though we're not being paid, it's, you know, yeah, and yeah, it'd be nice if we got a paycheck. Who wouldn't want to get paid for anything to do? But
right. People have no idea what the out-of-pocket expenses are either. I mean,
exactly.
Not even close. Like, I got a couple $100 I can blow. Come on, man. That don't even get one device.
Not always. Not the good ones anyway.
What are we talking about here?
I looked at the conversation that they were having in the chat room there, and Richie was asking what equipment that we use. And I saw some of my members listen to some different things we use. And you know, each of those devices is, you know, you're talking 50, 80, 100, $200.
Oh, yeah. Let me tell you, Richie's team is a well-equipped team. I met those guys at Selma Mansion. I went out to help Steve, one of the Pups founders, one night. We cleaned up real well. So that Seekers Club could come in, and those guys are well equipped. They know all the gadgets, and they're good to go.
We've got several cases ourselves as well. So you figure each of those cases has at least one of every kind of thing in it. You're talking sometimes two or three of every different type of equipment. You're talking thousands of dollars out of pocket.
Yeah, people don't realize that. I mean, I can throw some numbers out at you. I have the Mel Rim shadow detection device. It was $249. Mm-hmm. I have a REM pod, $169.
Oh yeah, got the same things.
They just, you know, people don't realize that it's not like it's like dropping a week's paycheck every couple of months.
And it's all speculation that it's working. I mean, we go out there with these devices and we put them out there and say, "Come talk to us."
Yeah, we got no idea.
And we have no idea whether they're going to work or if what we're even contacting is what we think it is.
Right.
We're just trying to make the most sense out of pretty much nothing. I mean, out of.
MJ says batteries and cords, and that's true. I was just thinking a few minutes ago. I was just thinking a few minutes ago that I have to go drop like $40 on batteries for this weekend.
Yep, sir. Yeah, fortunately, we got a couple members to help us out with that. But Colleen being one of them. I seen her online earlier. Some people are very generous and help with that. They get expensive because you don't know. You can't go into what. You can't go into an investigation without your stationary recorders, which we use, which most people, you know, everybody just does things differently, but you can't put a stationary recorder down and not be sure that it's going to stay on for 8 hours.
Right.
You know,
we've had that happen.
And we've had it, exactly. We've had it happen where they turned off in the middle of investigation. And you just can't take that chance. So pretty much around the board, you know, every investigation, certain things have to be changed out. Even if the batteries are half drained, you still got to change them.
Yeah, otherwise they'll go off in the middle of the investigation.
Which is no good for anybody.
Right. I just got my hands on a new recorder I can't wait to play with. I've taken it out on one investigation, but really haven't experienced. It's the Tascam DR40. It's got four channels, and it's got four mic inputs on the bottom, so you can actually run four mics, like in four separate corners of a room.
That's cool.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
then
you were telling us about
this part, right?
So yeah, so if you have four different corners of the room and you pick up an audio sound, you can analyze where it's louder, and you can almost put like a 3D image of sound together. It's pretty cool.
I guess you could run actual microphones when we all.
Yeah, yeah, it actually has phantom power on board. I'm sure it will drain the batteries a lot quicker, but, you know, if it's a condenser mic, you can actually send power through the mic so that it can turn it on. It's a sweet device. It was about $250 just for that recorder.
It's amazing what they're coming up with now, isn't it? I mean, you think about what we started out with, and devices really weren't designed to do what they're doing now, whereas people are actually taking the time to manipulate regular cameras for the paranormal field or take, EMF meters and designed them so that they're more compatible with what the needs of an investigator are, because you need a second set of arms.
Right. Now, don't you ever wonder when you're dropping $200 on a device that has nothing but a couple lights on it if it's actually doing anything?
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, you know that EMF detectors work. And Kenny Biddle, everybody knows Kenny, he actually raised a great question that I can't answer. He said, why are people searching for EMF anyway? Who says that spirits are made up of electromagnetic force?
We don't know that.
We could be searching for the wrong thing altogether, you know?
Yeah, it could be. It's a belief. You know, that's somebody who, before all of us great minds, who had apparently a greater mind than we did, says that's what it is. And we all fall behind and say, okay, that must be what it is. And we go by these meters and try and determine whether that's true or not. And
right.
Really, nothing that we do is 100% certain.
Right. 100% correct on that. And I commend you for saying that, because so many people believe it is, and it's not. Nothing we do is certain.
Agree that it's not.
Nothing is a science.
I mean, even EVPs can be easily explained at times.
Yep.
And you have to be careful even with them. If something is, you know, and there's other ones that are there, you know, when you don't, you know, let's put it this way. You get a voice on recording, you think it's a male, you think it's a female, but we really know who we're talking to?
No idea.
And we are assuming that it's the spirit of a man who used to live in the house or whatever, but we don't have a picture of him standing there talking to us.
I mean,
having a full conversation like you and I are talking right now.
Right.
And, you know, I'm sitting in a room with two ladies here. I mean, you know, there's nothing. There's nothing that we have technology-wise that will give us that ability at this point. We just put together a bunch of different tools, which we use to try and determine what the ultimate goal is, whether there's something in the house or not, or wherever. I mean, you accumulate, you sit there and you take temperature readings and EMF readings and voice recordings and all the other fine little gizmo gadgets that we have out there, and we put it all in the one big kitty and say, this must be what's happening. And, you know, right?
Absolutely. And you said it, I couldn't have said it any better.
It's just unfortunate that there's nothing straightforward about it, straight cut. I wish there was. It'd be a lot easier to buy that one piece of equipment that was the almighty holy grail of everything, you know. But instead, we go out and we buy, three different types or five different types of EMF meters because each of them does a different thing, or two or three different types of cameras because each one does a different thing, and then we hope over 1,000 investigations, you know, that we capture that one picture, you know.
Yep, and there's so many people out there trying to capture the same picture.
That's the unfortunately, you're right. We are, and we've been fortunate to capture a couple of those pictures over the years. You know, but they're far and few. I mean, you take thousands of pictures on investigations, and you know, you come along and you have, you know, maybe a handful, a dozen pictures that over thousands that you've taken that you can actually say, "Wow, this might be something." And
yep.
That's. Yeah, we all do it, though. We all go out and spend that money because we believe in something.
It makes for a great hobby. You know, some people do drugs, I hunt ghosts, and that's how I say it.
That's very true. Very true. I agree with that, too, as well. It's 100%.
It keeps us busy. Yeah.
Definitely keeps us busy. You know, it's fun. And it's challenging. And, you know, it's also dangerous,
It's a night away from the kids.
It's a night away from the kids, exactly.
It's a learning experience too. You know,
sure.
You're curious about, everybody is curious about death. You know, some people are afraid of it. Some people accept it. Some people, they don't know. And depending on your belief system, you either believe you go to hell or heaven, or there is nothing, or you're reincarnated. I mean, it doesn't matter, but we're all on a quest to try to find out. We're curious to know. And I think that's what drives most of us. I mean, everybody has their own experience of why they got into the paranormal. But in essence, we're all just curious to find out what is it like afterwards.
Right.
Yep. Yeah, is there more to it than we understand?
Yeah.
And I think we all know there is. It's just a matter of understanding what it is.
Right.
Not all good, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Unfortunately. But no. So it has its high points and low points. If I had to do it all over again, I would probably do the same thing I'm doing now.
And that's awesome. I would probably do the same thing. I'll be honest with you. I'd do the same thing too.
I mean, I haven't really thought twice about spending the money on the gear, because it's, you know, every piece of equipment that we buy, we can rationally say we can use it for a particular reason. Not just throwing money down the hopper. You know, in my opinion, sometimes you you might buy a piece of equipment that didn't work out the way you thought it was going to, but when you bought it, you had the highest of expectations for it. And unfortunately, it doesn't all work out that way, you know. But we had bought a germanium diode crystal microphone, $50. You know, we heard that it was going to be this, wonderful piece of equipment that will eliminate all the human voices and, living voices, I should say. And you only pick up spirit voices coming across this microphone. And it's junk. I mean, it's $50 we wasted. It hasn't done anything but pick up people's voices. I don't know if it's malfunctioning or what, but we haven't quite figured out how to use it yet. And unfortunately, those are the kind of things where we bought it with these expectations saying this is going to help us eliminate all kinds of contamination issues. And with it, there's nothing but questions and doubts. So we don't even use it anymore.
Yeah, people have to look out for that. I do think there's a lot of bogus equipment out there.
Yeah, and that's one of those things where you know, for $50 it was worth a shot. You know, if it had been $250, I probably wouldn't have done it. You know, but for right. $50, I said it's worth it because if it works, we'll go get more of them.
My average microphone is $50. I use Shure microphones, and I got like 10 of them. Oh. People don't realize the extra expense to the radio show either. Oof.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah, you have to buy all the equipment to just put stuff up online, live,
yeah.
right?
Yeah,
right.
Well, live is no problem. I stream it through. I have to purchase Winamp. I have a licensed version of Winamp, and then I go through a streaming application or plug-in with that, which streams everything that we say on my computer live to the radio station. But, you know, I have a 6-channel soundboard that sits on my desk. I have a 10-channel soundboard in the kitchen whenever I go anywhere, do live shows with other people. And then I have, you got all the headphones, the mics. I got 10 sets of headphones, 15 mics or so. I've got an iPad connected that does all the sound effects and touch. It produces the whole show. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, you have to have all the sounds on command. And it's not just something you can do on the computer because you're feeding output from Skype from the computer. So basically I'm outputting the audio from the computer and inputting it through a different sound card. I've got multiple sound cards on the computer.
Oh, sounds great. I mean, you're not getting any feedback whatsoever.
No,
I mean, whatever you're doing tonight is
all.
Working perfectly. So,
fabulous.
And I haven't had any problems on this end anyway.
So. Guys, it has been absolutely awesome having you there tonight. And if you got any shout-outs, go ahead and say your goodbyes. Do it now. You're welcome to hang on with me after the show.
And we'll do that. But, again, thanks for everybody who listened in tonight.
Thank you, guys.
Really appreciate you taking the time to join us. Hopefully we didn't disappoint you too much. But
thank you for having us on, Chuck.
No disappointment. Listen, I want you guys on again in the future because this is the first show where the continuous talking led right into other conversation. So we obviously we have plenty more to talk about.
Oh, I agree. So there would be no problem with that.
Yeah. as of right now, Frank, just shoot me over a couple of dates you're available, and I'll try to plug in one. It's Tuesday nights at 10 o'clock.
Pretty much any Tuesday you want.
All right, man. And we'll get together on that. And Carrie and Katie, thank you guys for hanging out with Frank and making it a spectacular show again tonight. Thank you to all of the fans that are out there in the chat room because we have a sick chat room tonight. We topped out in the chat room at over 23 people, I think. That's rare. So that's awesome. Special shout out to Seekers Club Paranormal. Those guys are hanging out. And anybody else is out there? Andrew. Andrew is a former member of Simply Paranormal is no longer with us, but he keeps up and he's a good dude. And you guys all know, scared at simplyparanormal.us if you need help. And if you know anyone that does, check me out online. You can find me by Googling anything that I do.
Very good.
And thanks for hanging out. Don't forget, this weekend, Simply Paranormal will be streaming live video from Selma Mansion. You must sign up for the newsletter. We will eventually give the link out to everyone, but all of the preliminary setup and stuff, if you want to see it all, you got to be signed up for the newsletter. Just go over to Simply Paranormal's Facebook page to get the link, sign up for the newsletter, and we'll shoot out a newsletter with all the information. If it works, it'll be a good time. If it doesn't, I'm sorry, but you'll still get good information in the email. So, you guys...
Give them our email address in case you want to check out our website.
Yeah, and you guys can post your email and your website in the chat room for everyone else as well.
They just did that, yes. I think I can see it. Yeah.
All right, guys, I'll talk to you in just a minute. And for all the fans out there, it's been awesome. Thank you very much for hanging out. This is Chuck Sanders and Soul Searching. Good night.
just a breath away. Losing my faith today.
Falling off the edge today.
I am just a man, not superhuman.
I'm not superhuman.
Someone save me from the haze. It's just another war. Just another family torn.
Listen, that's Hero by Skillet. If you guys are interested, I'm sure you can find it on iTunes. Good night.
The views expressed and the opinions given by the individual hosts and their guests do not necessarily reflect those of Paramania, its affiliates, or its sponsors.
You are listening to Paramania Radio.